Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 277 for Friday, November 22nd, 2013. Greetings from Cambridge, Massachusetts, where during the day I can still see intrepid oarsmen and women out there on the Charles River rowing in temperatures down in the 40s, sometimes in the near dark at the end of the day. My own rowing season came to a close about a month ago, I think, partly because I'm not as confident as those rowers must be that I wasn't going to land in the frigid water after catching a crab with my oar during an incautious or clumsy stroke. It's a beautiful sight, though, and in content I'm going to give you an update on a book that is helping me understand the unique sensibilities that this ancient sport seems to draw on. I'm not sure if my interview guest this week, Otis Chandler, ever rowed crew, but he is a tall, lanky fellow who would be well-suited to be a strong oar on an eight. He's also turning out to be an effective member of the Amazon team, guiding his Goodreads startup, acquired about 5 months ago by Amazon, to a successful launch this week of the first integration of Goodreads with the Kindle Fire and Paperwhite e-readers.
The thing I've been most impressed by is the level of just enthusiasm and support and excitement that the Amazon teams and the Lab 126 team who makes the Kindles have shown for this project. And it literally would not have been done without this level of enthusiasm and support. And there's been a ton of people who've helped us make it happen. And, you know, people who are passionate about reading and really wanted to see this day become a reality.
In news, I will take a close look at the major software updates for the Kindle Fire and Paperwhite that included not just the Goodreads integration, but several other new capabilities. I will also consider the latest Nook and a survey that indicates Santa will be busy bringing e-readers and e-books to kids this holiday season. For the tech tip, I will help you take advantage of the new cloud collections tool for organizing your books. And in content, as I said, I'll be talking about rowing. This week started out with a 1-2 punch in news when Amazon on Monday, November 18th, announced a major software update for the Kindle Fire HD and HDX, followed on Tuesday by one for the Paperwhite second generation. In each case, Goodreads was the star of the show, but by no means the only big improvement in the platforms. We also had been put on notice about these software updates with the release of the new generation of Kindle Fire and Kindle Paperwhite in late September. At that time, they were promised by the end of the year, which might have meant after the holiday shopping season, but I'm sure there was a great deal of pressure to get the releases ready well before then. Before digging into the details, I want to consider the timing of these software releases. Since they were announced on consecutive days, I assume the order could have been reversed, with the Paperwhite update coming first, followed by the Kindle Fires. That might have helped maintain the illusion that the Paperwhite is the premium reading platform because it is the dedicated e-reader, but the reality seems to be that the tablets are taking over the book even at Amazon, where we know the founder and CEO has a personal commitment to dedicated e-readers based on the e-ink technology. Don't get me wrong, I am a big fan of the Paperwhite, especially for reading in direct sunlight and reading in bed, where I find that it's more restful than the bright screen of a tablet. And the Paperwhite still has some advantages over the Fire for reading, such as following specific people's comments via kindle.amazon.com or seeing footnotes in the body of a book's text. But the Fire can do immersion reading with a professional narrator's words highlighted on the screen as he or she reads the book, as well as the robotic but increasingly listenable text-to-speech in any Kindle book or personal document that you load to the Fire. Since there is no audio on the Paperwhite, these bookish capabilities don't exist on the Paperwhite. With the new round of software updates, the Fire gets a further advantage because of its built-in microphone. You can use it for dictation across applications, including the Kindle app. So if you want to create a note for sharing on Goodreads or Twitter or just for your own use, you just tap the microphone icon, speak your note clearly, and the text appears in the note box for posting. So I guess it makes sense that the lead-off announcement was for the Fire OS 3.1. That happened on Monday. And when I prepared my questions for the Otis Chandler interviews scheduled for Wednesday, I included one on the possibility that the Paperwhite would not yet have Goodreads capability, and I was going to ask what's up with the Swiss Army knife, the Kindle Fire, getting the update before the supposedly preferable for serious readers dedicated e-reader, the Paperwhite. It turns out I had to scratch that question because on Tuesday the Paperwhite did get brought up to speed with its own update to version 5.4.2. The other thing about the software updates that has puzzled me is that last year's Paperwhite, now referred to as Paperwhite First Generation, received a separate update to 5.3.9 that did not include Goodreads or Cloud Collections or Kindle FreeTime. There were some other kind of minor updates that were for that older Paperwhite, but not the major ones. This made me think that finally we could be sure that if you want these new capabilities, you're going to have to upgrade to the latest Paperwhite. But when I emailed Amazon to confirm this, I received this answer. Quote, "We haven't announced anything about a software update for the first Kindle Paperwhite, but we have a long history of making new features available on older devices when possible. I'll have to ask you to stay tuned." Now, those two words, stay tuned, have often been used by Jeff Bezos and other Amazon executives in the past whenever they're asked about something Amazon is planning to do but is not quite ready to announce. So I guess it's too soon maybe to throw in the towel on your Paperwhite First Generation regarding the Goodreads and other capabilities. If I'm reading this email correctly, there still is a pretty good chance that all Paperwhites, first and second generation, will eventually be able to do the same things, have the same capabilities enabled by the software. The only difference in that scenario would be that the second generation Paperwhites would do them faster, with better screen resolution, very slightly less weight in the new Paperwhites, but none of this really enough to justify making the hardware upgrade if the software is the same. So for now, I'd hold on to your Paperwhite first generation, and as they say at Amazon, stay tuned. There were a lot of moving parts to these two software updates, so it's a little hard to know where to begin exploring them. I think I'll go in reverse order, talking about the Paperwhite update first, and I'm going to leave the Goodreads feature because that was covered pretty well in the interview with Otis Chandler that you'll hear in a little bit. I do want to talk about the Cloud Collections, and I'll hit that in the tech tips section. So that leaves the Kindle FreeTime to talk about on the Paperwhite, and I'm very pleased to see this one. I have received the green light from my daughter to give my grandson, who's 7 years old, a Paperwhite for Christmas, and that was before I knew that the Kindle FreeTime would be on the Paperwhite and what it would look like. It's basically a robust set of parental controls that you can set up for individual children, selecting what books from your archive you want each child to be able to read. You can also set up a daily reading goal in minutes, which sets up a chance for your child to receive awards for meeting that goal. When you tap on Kindle FreeTime on the home screen on the Paperwhite and then tap on the name of a child's account that you've set up, your child can decide which books to read. And if he or she wants to check on awards, there is an icon shaped like a blue ribbon, which makes it easy to get some encouragement for reading. The first reward icon shows a pair of eyeglasses and is named Bookworm. It shows up grayed out on my Kindle Paperwhite, but if I had read 45 minutes a day or met the daily reading goal set by my mother, the Bookworm award would show up bold and proud. I think my grandson is going to enjoy this. He proudly displayed on their refrigerator a list of all the books that he'd read last summer, so I think he's going to be checking the awards list fairly often. There's also a free time on the Kindle Fire, and in addition on the Fire, you can purchase a Kindle FreeTime Unlimited subscription for as little as $2.99 per month per child if you're a Prime member. It's an all-in-one subscription offering books, games, educational apps, movies, and TV shows, all curated carefully to be appropriate for children of ages 3 to 8. And parents can set time limits for the various categories and monitor activity. If you don't subscribe to Kindle FreeTime Unlimited, You can set up your own library of books and other media for your child on the Fire, and the books category will be synced between the Paperwhite and the Fire platforms. I was just trying this out with a test account that I set up for my grandson. I added the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin on the Paperwhite, and within moments it showed up in his Kindle Free Time area on my Kindle Fire HDX 7-inch. So this seems to be a pretty strong kid-friendly platform now available on the Fire and the Paperwhite, and I'm going to look forward to learning more about it from a 7-year-old user sometime after Christmas. The dictation feature of the new Fire update is pretty cool. I've become sort of a Siri ninja in training on my iPhone 5S, so it seems a little awkward all of a sudden to be talking to my Kindle Fires, and the capability is nowhere near as kind of multifaceted as Siri is on the iPhone, but I might well try dictating notes in my Kindle books instead of tapping them out with a stylus. Darlene and I don't watch any television. We've got a TV kind of languishing in a guest room on the third floor that we never watch, so I can't really tell you anything about the second screen feature of the update for the Fire, which enables you to, quote, fling TV shows and movies from your tablet to your big screen TV. I bet that's pretty cool if you have a flat screen TV that it has to be a certain model and it's not for all TVs, but I'm sure there'll be more and more that you could use it with. I'm also not tuned into the enterprise features such as secure Wi-Fi networks and the accessing of corporate apps and VPN clients that's part of this update for the Fire, but maybe these will enable some users to get a Kindle Fire provided by their employers or on their expense account or something. It seems a little far afield from the basic purpose of the Amazon tablet, which is to provide content and entertainment. The next news story I want to discuss might also relate to Kindle Free Time, because the story is a forecast of robust e-reader and e-book sales during the upcoming holiday season, stronger than last year. Digital Book World and Play Collective surveyed 603 U.S. adults with children ages 2 to 13 who read e-books and found sizable increases in the percentage of those parents planning to buy new devices and new e-books this season. Last year, 40% planned to buy a device for reading e-books, and this year the percentage rose to 46%. Over half of those parents intended for the new device to belong primarily to their child. 73% of the parents planned on buying e-books for their children, and that was up from 63% last year. The Kindle Fire, with its kid and parent-friendly Kindle Free Time feature, tops the list of devices for reading e-books at 29% of the total. Other tablets total 20%, that was a category, other tablets 20%, and the current iPad totals 19%. The e-ink Kindle comes in at 16%, followed by children's e-reader. I'm not sure what that is. Maybe Fisher-Price maybe makes an e-reader or something. And then the iPad mini at 14%. I find it notable that the Kindle Fire tops a list like this, with the e-ink Kindle doing better than the iPad mini, given that Apple historically has had such a strong marketing outreach to schools. Amazon seems to be making an end run around schools in this area, marketing the Kindle Free Time capability directly to parents. As I've made clear, my field experience with the Kindle platform and kids is limited to the grandparent level of engagement, but I hope to be increasing it soon. I think I'll pause here to play audio of an ad for Kindle Free Time, and I'll also have a link to it in the show notes so you can watch it.
Kids love tablets a lot. Which is why the new Kindle Fire HD comes with Kindle Free Time that lets you set limits on how long your kids watch and play, and lets them know when their time's up, so you don't have to. The all-new Kindle Fire HD.
You can tell that the target for that audience is the parent who maybe gets tired of telling the child that their time with the video game is up And when it talks about their time being up, there's the Kindle Fire that the boy is reading on his bed flashes a nice little blue message saying, "All done for today." And he flops down on his bed, disappointed that he can't be playing whatever the video game was. Nice to think that the Kindle Fire would be doing that and maybe putting off some whining and some back and forth that might be taking place between parent and child. Well, I obviously have a lot less experience than I know some of you have out there, so I'd be interested to hear from you if you've tried this Kindle Free Time on the Fire and what your experiences might be on the Paperwhite as it now exists on the new Paperwhite. You can send me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com, or you could leave a comment at the show notes page, which is thekindlechronicles.com. Before we leave the news, I said I was going to talk about the Nook, and I always forget to do this. I bought a new Nook Glow Light a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, to see how it compares with the Paperwhite. And after about an hour of trying it, whenever I buy a Nook, I read some more of the Ted Kennedy autobiography I bought at Barnes & Noble probably about a year ago. I just lost interest in it. The one thing I did confirm is that you can advance pages apparently endlessly without seeing the black flash that you get every 10 pages or so on the Paperwhite. So I don't know how they did that. It's still e-ink technology. But beyond the novelty of it, I didn't find that in any way that it was a compelling advantage over the Kindle. I just didn't even notice those flashes anymore. The problem with the Nook is that while Amazon has been relentlessly improving the Kindle platform with features like X-ray, reporting of content errors, Kindle Free Time, Goodreads, translations, web storage of notes and highlights, and growing proprietary content like Kindle Singles, Day One, Cloud Collections, and Kindle Owners Lending Library, the Nook has been pretty much frozen in amber, offering a basic e-ink reading device without any significant innovations. In a frankly embarrassing comparison, I thought, of the Nook Glow Light with the Paperwhite on the Barnes & Noble site, the only items that Barnes & Noble is able to offer as advantages are ad-free experience in bold letters, free in-store support in B&N stores, free Wi-Fi in B&N stores, and read Nook books on Wi-Fi in stores. I've talked about this before, but on the Nook that's in front of me tonight, the home screen has three books that I'm reading, and half of the home screen is devoted to Now on Nook, with a big icon of a book they'd like me to buy, Sycamore Row by John Grisham. If that's an ad-free experience, then I'm an unbiased comparer of e-readers. Obviously, I'm not. I have bought Nooks before, and, you know, this time the disparity with the Kindle just seemed particularly stark. Unfortunately, I waited longer than 14 days, the period when you can send a Nook back for a refund, compared with 30 days for a Kindle, so I guess I'll probably be offering it on eBay in the coming weeks. You know, actually, I think I will be glad to send this Nook to the first one of you who hears my rueful comment on the Nook and sends me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com with the subject Nook Giveaway. I don't delight in the Nooks fading from the scene, but I do note how quickly it is taking place, and I suspect that this may be the last holiday season when there will be a new Nook model introduced. For the tech tip, I want to talk mainly about cloud collections. When I first heard that term, I thought it was going to mean that I would be able to go to a new area of Manage Your Kindle at Amazon.com and organize my long list of items that has accumulated there, nearing 1,000 titles the last time I looked. Alas, that's not how it works at this point. But a Mayday Tech guy that I spoke with tonight suggested that this might well be an amplification of cloud collections in the future because he has heard more than one customer request it. Until then, there is now the ability to set up cloud collections which synchronize across devices offering the feature. At this point, that seems to include Kindle Fire HD and HDX and the new Paperwhite, as well as Kindle for iOS. I don't see cloud collections on my Nexus 7 running the Kindle for Android app, so some of the apps just haven't caught up with it yet, but they probably will eventually. The way cloud collections work is that on any device that has them, you can create a collection and edit the books in a collection, and the collection structure will ripple across the Whisper Sync to your other devices, and that's pretty cool. I did run into an odd problem on my Paperwhite after the upgrade because my currently reading collection was showing 31 titles, most of them grayed out because they weren't on my Paperwhite. They must have been in a collection on one of my other devices, including some that I have in Denver, so I couldn't get at them. I had to select each of the grayed out titles one by one, choose Add to Collection, and then uncheck the currently reading collection so that the book wasn't in any collection. Then I was able to pare the collection down to the three books that I wanted to have in it. A listener, Tom Semple, reported that though cloud collections offer advantages to most customers, if you've organized your entire library, including books that you sideloaded from various sources and maybe have organized using the Caliber digital library program, you might very well be upset with the cloud collections change. A sensible fix that Tom suggested is that Amazon could include a way to turn cloud collections off, perhaps globally or by device or app, so customers could continue to manage their libraries on their own if that's what they were doing before. By the way, Tom offered a brilliant alternative to waking Darlene up from a sound sleep the next time my voice fails in the middle of recording an episode of the Kindle Chronicles. He wrote, "You could always email your script to send to Kindle and have your Fire read it out for you," Tom wrote. Thankfully, I'm back, not quite at full voice, but enough to get through the show, I hope. So I'm not going to need to use this clever backup plan. But here is an example of how it might sound.
As you can see, Len has turned over the microphone to me, his loyal text-to-speech assistant on his Kindle Fire. I won't be questioning his choice of words or offering humorous interludes of marital discord, but I do promise to give as accurate a reading of Len's content as is digitally possible. I won't need tea with honey or other devices in order to make sure the show goes on, week after week, year after year. And I want to thank Tom Semple for giving me a chance to be recognized as a flawless and reliable backup, should the need ever arise again. Back to you, Len.
Well, I feel as if I should give that woman a name, and Fiona would be the natural one. That was the code name for the first Kindle. That sounds right. I hope I won't be needing her help soon, but Darlene was very relieved to learn that she has been replaced in the understudy's role, and she's very grateful for the idea from Tom. One last thing I'll mention in tech tips I noticed is that if you have more than one Kindle or apps, if you go to manage your Kindle at Amazon.com, any of the apps which isn't running the latest software will have a little eye over the icon. And that's pretty handy because as these updates come rolling out, this is a handy way to see if you've got the latest on all of your devices, if you have more than one device. Otis Chandler and his wife Elizabeth launched Goodreads in January 2007, 10 months before the debut of the first Kindle. He has said that the genesis of the company was his desire to read more books, and since its founding, Goodreads has attracted 20 million members who have a similar desire to read more books with the help of friends who gather at the site to recommend, review, and find books. Since Amazon acquired Goodreads earlier this year, the combined team has been working on integration of Goodreads features with Kindle devices, and the fruit of that intense project was revealed, as I talked about in the news, in two major software updates. In preparing to talk with Otis, I learned that the Goodreads workforce has doubled since the acquisition, from about 35 at the time of the acquisition to more than 70 now, many of them on the engineering developers team. Goodreads membership, which stands at 20 million, is 4 million higher than it was at the time of the acquisition. It was 16 million at that time. And those numbers make me proud to claim my status as member number 999. That's a distinction I gained when I joined Goodreads in February of 2007. I should also note before we turn to the interview that the Goodreads integration at Podcast Time is not available in the UK, but it does seem to be available in Canada and Australia. I assume it will be rolling out to other nations in the coming weeks and months. When I reached Otis Chandler by Skype on Wednesday, he was savoring the results of the Kindle project, and I began by asking him what features of this first version of Goodreads on Kindle particularly pleased him.
I mean, our really like long-term goal here is to make the reading experience better. And I think there's, you know, reading is basically a flow where people are discovering books, then discussing them, then reading them, and then going back to the next one. And I think the better we can help people do all those things and let the product get out of the way and just really let people get into, you know, discussing and discovering good books, that's what we want. So I think this is a great first start, or a great initial launch, and I think there are a lot of exciting things we're going to be launching, you know, in future years. Some of the things that I think we did well in this version, just the integration into the reader itself. So it's really easy now to just highlight something and share a thought to your friends, or even ask a question to your friends. I've done that a few times and found it to be really powerful, where people can have different opinions or answer something you weren't sure of.
So you did that right from the Kindle?
Yeah, I was embarrassingly rereading Ender's Game because it's one of my favorites from childhood, and the movie's out, and he uses the word null gravity instead of zero gravity, and I wondered if that meant something different from null gravity, from zero gravity. So I posed the question to my Goodreads friends, and I got some good answers.
Well, that's interesting. So I had realized that you can highlight a quote while you're reading, and then when you share it, you can share it to Goodreads. But what you did was actually write a note and then share the note on Goodreads?
I highlighted a quote and then shared it and then posed my question in the text.
Oh, I see.
And I think that's really indicative of kind of our guiding philosophy for how we're looking at, you know, where is social reading going, which is, by the way, a phrase that I don't like.
Why not?
Because social reading implies you're reading socially. You're reading with a bunch of other people. And people don't read with a bunch of other people. They read alone.
Right.
So, you know, the way it works and has always worked is you read alone and then you discuss socially. So we want to keep that paradigm. That's our guiding philosophy. You read alone, and Kindle's going to be, you know, the amazing platform for that, and you discuss socially, and that's what we want and what increasingly Goodreads is. So letting you easily, like, throw out a discussion while you're reading and then get right back into the reading experience, I think, is really important. And that's one of the things I think we've done, you know, really well, and I think we're very excited about.
When you posted that question while you were reading Ender's Game, and you've got, I think, you've probably got more followers, but you've got 1,600 friends, did you hear back pretty quickly from someone who had an answer to the question?
Within a day, yeah. I got a bunch of good answers within a day.
Some of the integration is kind of one step removed from the book. I mean, you've got the ability to highlight the quotes and, as you just pointed out, do notes. But if I want to see updates, or I want to see my shelves, or I want to see my friends, I kind of go out of the book back to sort of a different... I'm still in the Kindle, but I'm not actually in the book. And was that part of the design, to sort of be careful about what elements were actually part of the reading experience when you were in the book?
So, yeah, I mean, we wanted to make it easy for you to keep reading and not be disruptive to the reading experience. But when you're in the mode where you're looking for good books or wanting to talk to people about the good books you're reading, we wanted to make Goodreads easily accessible.
Right.
So that you're not having to put your Kindle... You know, the problem that we often face is when people want to do that who are Goodreads members, they've got to put their book down, or if they're on an iPad, open the Goodreads app, or, you know, open their computer and go to the Goodreads website, and then find some good books or some good discussion there. So I think just putting it, even if it's still a few taps away, on the device, I think it's just going to make it a lot easier for people to really engage deeper with the books that they're interested in. And then over time, we're going to be improving the integrations, of course.
Now, I noticed that when I got to the end of a book, usually on the Kindle or the Fire, there's a chance to leave a review that shows up on Amazon. And now the default is, if I write a little review, it will post to Amazon and Goodreads. And then there's an options place where you can unclick one or the other. So you could just do the review only at Goodreads or only at Amazon. And the fact that sort of the default was to post it at both places made me wonder if you think most people who are Goodreads members will feel comfortable leaving their review at both places.
Yeah, so our starting point in designing really any feature we build is, what's the ideal customer experience? You know, what can we do that's really going to make our users happy? And I think in this case, we had two sets of users. We have users who are, you know, Goodreads users who are wanting to post the reviews to Goodreads, and users who are Amazon, you know, longtime Amazon and Kindle readers who are used to posting their review to Amazon. So we really wanted to cater to both sets of users, and frankly, many of them actually already do post reviews to both places.
Yeah.
So that's our best guess as to what our users are going to want to do, and we're definitely going to be watching that and seeing how it goes as we launch.
Now, if someone's reading a book and they've got the latest software update, so they finish the book and they leave the check on Goodreads, so the review is headed for Goodreads, but they're not a Goodreads member, do they get walked through a process of easily signing up to be a Goodreads member at that point?
I believe the Goodreads checkbox only appears if you are a Goodreads member.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because I put in my Goodreads information when I started up that software update. So, yeah, that makes sense. I really love the idea of being able to highlight a quote and then sending it off to Goodreads. And then I was thinking, well, I've got 153 friends on Goodreads, and would I want to see when one of them highlights a passage in this particular book that I'm reading? And at first I thought, no, I don't want 153 people reading this book with me. It's a private thing. But then I thought, well, what are the chances that any one of them might be reading this exact book? And if they were, and you know, in your case, you've got 1,600 friends, even with that many, the chances of one of them reading the exact book that you're reading and then highlighting something, it doesn't seem like it would be intrusive to have that sort of further integration appear where you're actually seeing individual Goodreads members' comments within the book as you're reading it.
One of my favorite things about Goodreads is the fact that I've, you know, over the 8 years I've been working on it, gotten all my friends to join it. And what that means for me is anytime I go to a book page, when someone's recommended me a book, I look it up on Goodreads, and I can almost always find a bunch of my friends who have an opinion on it,
yeah,
and who've added it to the site. And that often saves me from reading bad books or helps me decide that a book is interesting enough to read. So I think having a lot of friends on the site has been a real value add to me personally. And in terms of, you know, bringing in the conversation into the book, and I think you're talking about, you know, not just public highlights, but highlights from friends.
Right.
You know, that's a really interesting notion, and one we're definitely going to be doing a lot of research around. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, again, our philosophy is we don't want to be too distractive in the reading experience. But I think, you know, especially for some genres, that can add a lot of value. I think, you know, nonfiction books, there can be a lot of different conversation going on that different facts and stuff that I think a lot of value can be added, even if it's just little things. Like, you know, I remember reading the Steve Jobs bio and thinking, and it mentioned the Stanford commencement speech he gave that was amazing, and I remember like spending a bunch of time trying to Google that to re-listen to it. So if someone had just, you know, added that in as a comment, like, here it is, mm-hmm, I think that would be cool. There's other books, you know, you're reading a great fiction book, you just want to keep plowing through. So I think we're going to have to experiment with that, and if you have too many friends, I think we're going to have to do a good job of personalizing it for you and showing you, okay, here are the ones we think that are going to matter to you in this case. So I think we've got a bunch of work there to do to figure out what is the solution that's going to work for all readers in every kind of book.
Yeah, and I suppose you could have kind of opt-in. I could set a certain book to be able to see all my friends' comments or not. And if you're making possibilities, then each reader can customize even an individual book experience to their liking.
We're always big believers in customization, so definitely.
When the acquisition was announced, you wrote a blog post, and you invited Goodreads members to tell you what they hoped the integration would look like and what they would most love to see in the Kindle. Do you remember from that early wave of comments what the top things people were requesting, and were you pretty much able to do them in this debut version?
Yeah, I think the biggest problem we've had, and that a lot of Kindle customers have asked us for, particularly after that blog post, was just make it easy for me to keep my Goodreads profile up to date with what I'm actually reading.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, in the past, it's been a very manual process for our members where they have to literally put down their book, go to Goodreads, and enter in the things they're reading. And what we find is people just don't remember to do it, or at least not right away. And then they'll remember in a couple of weeks, they'll come back later and say, oh, I've read four books since I've been back here, and they add a bunch of stuff. And that that works, but it's not as easy as it could be. And I think that's the problem this initial release makes really easy to do. It's really easy to now say what you're reading and give it a rating when you're done, which I think is going to be kind of the base of the pyramid upon which we can build a lot of new and exciting innovations for people once we know what they're all reading.
I'm kind of anal on my progress in reading books, so I go back and I adjust the percentage that I've read fairly frequently. Never if I've advanced less than 10 percentage points, I don't do it. I suppose that would be possible too, that the Kindle would know that I had advanced from 20% of a certain book read to 50%, and somehow that would get cranked into the system.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think we get somewhere near a million progress updates shared every month, where someone, like you said, is just going in and saying, now I'm at 14% or 20%. And again, they're having to put their book down to go to Goodreads to enter that. So I think, you know, making it easier to do that is a feature that didn't make this release, but is one that's high on the list for us to add in the future and let people share that without having to leave the book.
Well, now, when you were in the early days of the acquisition, I can imagine that you imagined this week and what Goodreads would look like on a Kindle, and you've traveled a long way in these months dealing with a big company and all the issues that circled around it. And I wondered if you thought back to when you started it, what the biggest surprises were between then and this week when it was accomplished. Did it take longer than you thought it would take to get to this point, or did you think you'd get further than you were able to get this week in these months?
Two things on that. The first is, I think you asked me what I've been impressed by, and I think the thing I've been most impressed by is the level of just enthusiasm and support and excitement that the Amazon teams and the Lab 126 team who makes the Kindles have shown for this project. And it literally would not have been done without this level of enthusiasm and support. And there's been a ton of people who've helped us make it happen. And, you know, people who are passionate about reading and really wanted to see this day become a reality. And I think that's the thing that's been most impressive. It's been really exciting to see, just how excited people are for this. The second thing is, this is just, you know, Jeff Bezos says this line, day one. So getting Goodreads integrated into the Kindle, we're literally at day one of what we want to do. So I think, to me, I'm most excited about thinking about what are we going to do next year and the year after that and the year after that, because we have a long, big vision for what reading and discussion can be and book discovery can be integrated with the social graph and the reader itself. And that's what I'm really excited about. So this is just the beginning.
Has this experience made you even more sure that the next 5 years are going to see social changing reading as much as digital has in the past 5 years?
Absolutely. You know, I think if you look at what social has done to traditional media, you know, that's why social media is a buzzword and why there are Facebook and Twitter icons on almost every web page you can find. I even see them on taco trucks now. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do with them. But, you know, social media is everywhere. Everyone says, follow me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. And I don't think we've had the opportunity to, you know, really apply that to publishing. So I think publishing is next, where finding books through your friends, through other people, is going to just be a better way of finding good books. And I think now that we're integrated with Kindle and we can really scale to a global level, we're going to be able to do that at a much bigger level, much faster, and I think add a lot of value to a lot of readers and a lot of authors.
I'm sure you saw prototypes of what it was going to look like, but did you have a personal Kindle of your own that you did the updated software on and fired it up for the first time and saw that Goodreads G appear on it, or what was your own personal experience of the moment when this went live?
I got a dev build of this, obviously, you know, maybe a month ago, where I was able to finally start reading a book and share my notes and highlights as I was reading and then rate it when I was done. And that was just an amazing moment.
Yeah.
I think that was just kind of cool to see, hey, I can really make this easy to do now.
Now, at that point, your shared quotes weren't live, so sometime during this week, you probably had a chance to share your first live quote from a book to Goodreads.
No, I was able to do it a month ago.
Oh, was it showing up? And were people saying, where'd this come from? Or that was like an early...
Yeah, they probably figured I copy-pasted it.
Oh, I see. They didn't realize that you'd taken advantage of this new software.
Yeah. I mean, the great thing is Goodreads has a really rich quotes database already.
Yeah.
You know, I told you we got a million progress updates shared every month. We also get a million quotes shared every month on Goodreads already without any integration into any e-reader. You know, quotes are just something that really resonate with people that can often really capture a big idea.
Yeah.
Or an idea that's worthy of being shared. And you know, our quotes database is 100% member-driven from people who are literally copy and pasting or typing these things in. And I think, you know, this is only going to accelerate that pattern is by making it easier to do. And that's what we love doing. We love taking things that people are going out of their way to do and making them easier to do.
I bought my first book as a result of something I saw at Goodreads because you had liked a review of Frankenstein that someone had written. So I read the review. It was great. And since I was there holding my Kindle, all I had to do was tap on seeing the book at Amazon, and then it was like, you know, $3 or something. I said, well, I'll buy it. Why not? If I had been reading that from my updates and on my computer or somewhere else, there's just like there would have been one little barrier to buying the book that it didn't feel like it existed on the Kindle.
Exactly. I think that was about 30 minutes ago.
Yeah, it was.
And if I remember right, that review was by Conrad, who, and this is just illustrating another thing I love about Goodreads, is a guy I don't know in real life, but he joined the site relatively early, I want to say in 2007 or 8, and he's some sort of indie hipster guy who lives in Brooklyn and reads really cool stuff. And I've been following him for years, and I love his reviews. And I've never met him in real life, but everything he reviews, I pay close attention to, just because he's, you know, got really good taste. And I think that's one of the powerful things of Goodreads is your friends just often aren't reading things that are particularly interesting to you.
Right.
And letting you connect to those people who do read things that are really interesting to you and are more similar to you in their taste is one of the, you know, great innovations of the whole internet. But I think that's what we're applying to books. And I think, you know, again, we're at day one for what we can do there. But I think it's, you know, we've already shown it to be pretty powerful.
I have been speaking with Otis Chandler, co-founder and CEO of Goodreads. Thanks very much, Otis.
Thanks very much, Glenn. It was a pleasure.
In content, I want to mention again a book that my friend Kes Woodward recommended. It's The Amateurs, the story of four young men and their quest for an Olympic gold medal by David Halberstam. First published in 1979 and released in ebook format by Open Road in December of last year, it chronicles some amazing characters pursuing a sport devoid of financial prizes and glory, but full of lore and drama. It compares the camaraderie and support of teammates in a boat with four or eight oarsmen with the loneliness of the sculler who rows a single. One of the main characters, Tiff Woods, shifts to sculling in a passage in which Halberstam described the legendary Harvard rowing coach Harry Parker. Here's an excerpt. Wood knew what loneliness was like. The only pressure was the pressure from within. Harry Parker, the Olympic coach and his coach on and off for some 14 years, was a flinty and unsentimental man. Tiff Wood knew that if he went to Parker one morning and told him that sculling was too much, that he no longer had the taste for it, there would be neither surprise nor disappointment on Parker's face. Parker would accept the decision without questioning it. He would probably not even ask Tiff if he was sure he made the right decision. Harry Parker accepted only those who were already motivated. That was a premise of rowing. He had no time for providing inspiration. The Amateurs receives an average of 4.07 out of 5 stars on Goodreads and 4.6 out of 5 stars on Amazon. I am 35% through this book, and I am not looking forward to reaching the end. That's it for this week. I want to thank those of you who sent wishes for a rapid recovery after last week's bout with a cold that laid me pretty low. And some of your messages were great. I even got a great recipe for voice tea from Mark Roberts. Pretty tasty concoction that looks like it'll help out. But then I've also got Fiona to help out too, so I should be in pretty good shape. My guest next week will be Jeff Bell, head of Amazon Publishing, who's going to give us an update on the Kindle First program. I had planned to post my conversation with Jeff this week, but when the Goodreads software update was announced, I decided to move Otis Chandler ahead in the schedule to talk about what, at that point, was breaking news. And Jeff said he understood. In fact, he'd recently visited the Goodreads team in San Francisco. You'll find his discussion of Amazon Publishing's latest initiatives to be timely as well on next week's TKC 278. Music for my podcast is from an original Thelonious Monk composition named Well You Needn't. This version is Ramonk by Eval Monegat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording. This is Len Edgerly in Cambridge, Massachusetts for the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.